the One Voice for Neurology podcast, a series of podcasts exploring why it's time to make neurology a priority, how that can be achieved with a global and uniform response, and what that could mean for the future of neurology and those living with a neurological disorder. I'm Sam Polly, and you're listening to episode 8, entitled The Cost of Neurological Disorders. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. In this episode, we'll be taking a closer look at the current cost of neurological disorders worldwide and what the solutions are. To do that, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Dan Chisholm, a mental health specialist at the WHO Regional Office for Europe. Dan, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. Pleased to be contributing to this podcast.
Well, Dan, let me start by asking you, what do we know about the current cost of neurological disorders worldwide and their burden on society?
Well, we know that the costs are incredibly high, and that can be measured either in epidemiological terms through estimates of the prevalence of neurological disorders, or it can be measured in economic terms through, for example, estimates of societal costs. So I'll give you a couple of examples. There was a recent Lancet publication that showed that nearly 2 million deaths are attributable to neurological diseases in the WHO European region, with stroke, dementias, and headache being the leading contributors to overall burden of disease estimates. And then on the economic side, a much older study, but one which was done in about 30 European countries, came out with an estimate of about 800 million euros as an annual cost of neurological disorders in those 30 European countries. So whether you measure it in economic or epidemiological terms, you can say the costs are very substantial.
So those figures that you've given are clearly figures that are exploding. Many people might say that we're even sitting on a ticking time bomb. What do you think is the most important thing that we should be discussing in terms of the global economics and neurological disorders?
Yeah, I mean, the cases, of course, have been going up, and that's partly related to the aging of populations. So more people in age groups where neurological disorders, particularly ones related to aging, like dementia, stroke, Parkinson's disease, are more prevalent. So that's a major consideration. In terms of what we should be discussing, I think maybe three main things rather than one. One is around the kind of awareness and preparedness. So given the aging of populations and other factors which are contributing to the increased exposure of population to neurological conditions, then I think, you know, there obviously is a need to continue the awareness raising and consequent preparedness, for example, with respect to dementia policy and services and care. And then a second would be prevention. So particularly with respect to modifiable lifestyle risk factors, that in fact also those that are very well known and established for non-communicable diseases more generally. So around the need for physical activity, reduced consumption of tobacco and harmful alcohol use, healthy diets and things like that. And all of these can contribute to also to a kind of healthy aging policies in countries. And then the third would be more around the access to decent services, decent quality services and interventions as part of the overall move towards universal health coverage.
So what is the impact at the moment, would you say, of neurological disorders on society? That might be the workforce, health service, financial cost, any of those areas. What would you say the main impacts are, and does that differ between the regions globally?
Yes, the impacts, as I was saying, are very substantial everywhere, but they will depend on the underlying prevalence of neurological disorders. So, for example, in this region of Europe, where I'm based, we would have, for example, higher rates of dementia, but lower rates of epilepsy compared to Sub-Saharan Africa, for example. So this is one source of differences between different parts of the world. And then when we think about the impacts, they break really down into direct expenditures on health services, healthcare, and by individuals, affected individuals, families, and also by governments. But also, we have to think beyond the health services or health sector and think about all the impacts on the broader economy. And these can be counted as sort of so-called indirect costs for those, you know, who are affected, plus their carers, in terms of lost opportunities for income generation, employment, also social participation and other aspects. So, you know, the impacts are wide ranging and need to be considered beyond just what happens within the health system or the health services.
So it makes real economic sense then to act on neurology?
It does, yes. Both because you have a large attributable burden, but also because that burden or substantial part of it is modifiable, preventable, or can be addressed through effective intervention, services and policies.
Well, thank you, Dan. Don't go anywhere. We want to keep on talking and we'll talk more after this.
Hi, I'm Joke Jaarsma, President of the European Federation of Neurological Associations. You are listening to the One Voice for Neurology podcast.
Just a moment ago, you spoke about the very differing impacts and the differing challenges. How do we globally address those challenges when they're so different?
Well, I think certainly, as we were saying, you know, better appreciation of both these, what are the adverse impacts, and sort of putting a number on some of these can be helpful. But also on the flip side, to be able to really demonstrate what are the benefits, the positive benefits that come with scaled up investment. That's equally important, if not more important than just showing that there is a big problem or a big challenge for public health. A second thing is, of course, to have clear agreement or consensus and hopefully commitment, political commitment, financial commitment to a set of prioritized actions and activities for different countries to pursue. And so in that respect, there's a new draft global action plan WHO's preparing on epilepsy and other neurological disorders. So this can be an important point around which to gain consensus and agreement on what other prioritized areas of work that all countries can follow. And then once you've got those clearly agreed objectives and activities, then of course it's very good to build momentum and partnerships across different stakeholder groups, including governments and academia, non-governmental organizations, people with lived experience of neurological conditions, and other interested stakeholders through things like this One Neurology initiative.
And are there any examples that you might have or case studies of where that's already happening?
Yeah, I mean, certainly at the disease, you know, specific level, whether it's Alzheimer's or stroke or Parkinson's, of course, there are many notable efforts being made by particularly non-governmental organizations to support local programs and initiatives. But more, let's say, regionally or internationally, another example is in WHO Europe, we have a recently established mental health coalition, which will extend not just to mental health, but also to brain health. And this can be used to promote and communicate and share sort of integrated approaches for addressing mental, neurological and other non-communicable disease conditions.
We've talked a little bit about solutions already, but what would you say as we come to a close would be the sort of key message you'd like people to take away with them about what you feel the solution is? And also what for you would be your absolute vision or dream that we can achieve?
Well, I think it's sort of partly around making the invisible more visible. So we have a huge burden, but it's not fully appreciated or recognized or understood. So I think that certainly is part of what initiatives like this are very much about, and to be welcome and supported. And then once you have that better, stronger understanding, then you have a much better basis for working out what can be done by different actors, stakeholders, and what can be done between those together to really shift the agenda a bit and bring it up to where it needs to be. Because it's partly this lack of maybe strong visibility or attention that is being given to it.
And you feel positive about the outlook for the future then?
Well, I know you want me to say yes. I mean, there's always a lot of competing pressures, and particularly, you know, at the current time, and governments, of course, are borrowing huge amounts of money to deal with the current crisis. So that's a concern. And of course, it's easy to point out that people with neurological conditions have been particularly affected by the pandemic. But that's not quite the same as saying that they will actually get a significant amount of additional investment and support. So that's an ongoing challenge that we all have in bringing brain health, mental health, and other often neglected areas to the fore.
Well, Dan, that's all that we've got time for today. But thank you so much for joining us and for all the insight that you've brought for us today.
Very welcome, Sam.
I'd like to also thank you, everyone that's been listening today. And before we finish, I just want to remind you all that if you would like to join in the conversation with us on Twitter about what we've discussed today or any other issues, then you can find us at OneNeurology _ with the hashtag OneNeurology. And if you missed any of our previous episodes, then do make sure to have a listen to those at oneneurology.net. Until next time, thanks for joining us and bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the One Voice for Neurology podcast, produced and hosted by Sam Polley on behalf of EFNA and the EAN, the umbrella organisations representing patient organisations and neurologists in Europe.